Gators Breakdown, because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC, coming at you the day after the disappointing loss for the Gators. Tigers come into the swamp, win 37-34. Gators playoffs hopes are dashed right now. Joining me here on Sunday, as these guys do week in and week out, Nick DeLaTorre from Gators Territory, Graham Hall from the Gainesville Sun. Gentlemen, this episode wasn't supposed to be like this.
No, not at all. And I think that's why, I don't want to say overreactions, but I think you're having some of the reactions that you are in the immediate aftermath, because this was a team Florida was supposed to beat, should have beat. And once again, it's hard to feel like they didn't kind of shoot themselves in the foot repeatedly last night. So, with so much to play for, and with much of the conversation throughout the week being, should this game even happen, the ACC scheduling it to just get to the conference championships, there's already talk about putting Ohio State in when they've played teams with a combined losing record. It has to add to the frustration that you kind of feel like if you aren't even playing, you go to the SEC championship game, you still have everything in a sense to play for. But this game just kind of epitomized why Florida isn't ready to compete for a college football playoff right now.
Yeah, Nick. Yeah, go ahead.
I think Alabama was going to show you that this week, but instead LSU did. I mean, you lost to a 24-point underdog that was playing a freshman quarterback and, you know, the defending national champions that had four guys from that team back, and two of them weren't playing. Just completely disappointing performance from Florida. And, you know, maybe it's all that those ho-hum performances that we saw, you know, and we talked about it last week. Dave, can you flip a switch? It certainly looked like that switch was stuck in the down position Saturday night.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was, guys. And I put that on, you know, on Twitter last night after the game. This stretch of the season where Florida was playing overmatched opponents, guys, the teams that you knew Florida was better than, it wasn't supposed to end like this. When you go against Tennessee and Kentucky and Vanderbilt, the weaker teams of the SEC is the SEC East, you expected this team to, maybe if they were going to, I'm not going to quote unquote relax or, you know, take it off, you still expected they could go out there and play good games and find ways to get better, find things to work on in preparation for Alabama. I mean, and look, it was called nitpicking at the time. Oh, you're just being nitpicky. They're still winning games. Well, that's the reason you kind of nitpick at times, is because there's going to become a time to where those issues that came up in these last 3 to 4 games are going to rear their ugly head, and you may not be able to flip that switch to go back to how the offense looked in like a machine versus Ole Miss and Texas A&M and Missouri and Georgia at times. And then the defense, you know, it just kind of is what it is. Those issues really came to a head again versus LSU. But yeah, I mean, the last 3 or 4 games, when what was considered nitpicking really just kind of showed up.
It was kind of because nitpicking seemed justified. Florida was, you analyze Florida's roster, you look at their competition, those were games that they shouldn't have been winning just by 7-3 points. They were games that we all had said, this is an opportunity to work on several aspects, to improve, to play that complete game. And if you have a chance to get some of those younger guys in there in the secondary, start building that experience. And we didn't ever see Florida do all of those things. Yeah, they would get guys in the fourth quarter. Emory Jones would come in, Rashad Torrance would come in, but it also, that game was usually defined by a slow start in the first quarter or trailing early. And that's just never what you necessarily want to see if you're a team that already is kind of on the outside looking in, needs some style points in a sense to possibly jump your head-to-head loss in Texas A&M. And as all Florida fans know, they want Kyle Trask to go out there and make his Heisman case. We're pushing Dan Mullen forward every single week. And when you see him not able to play that complete game, it certainly kind of leads to what you said, a lot of this nitpicking, this criticizing, because Florida has things to play for that are outside the short term or outside that current game, the long-term improvement, but also those personal awards that are going to get your team noticed, are going to help with recruiting rankings. are going to lead players into your program. And seeing Florida just consistently fail to capitalize on all the opportunities available has to be frustrating if you're a Florida fan, especially when that lack of capitalization is coming against weaker opponents.
Yeah, I think that's the most frustrating part for the fan base, was seeing everything looks so good after that Georgia game and then not being able to keep it at 10, keep the level at 10. Because you've seen Alabama do it. You've seen Alabama get better as the season progressed. And you were hoping and kind of targeting, pointing to Florida doing the same and having this epic SEC championship game. And that all comes crashing down now as Florida loses to LSU. Let's break it down a bit more. But before we do, remember, you can find Gators Breakdown at news4jax.com/Gators Breakdown. You'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes there, as well as News4Jax coverage of the Gators. Please share, rate, and review the show. It really helps us out. Hit that like button on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. Or if you just want the audio version, check us out on your favorite podcast platform. And follow Gators Breakdown on social media. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. Guys, I mean, first of all, Florida just wasn't ready to play this game. That's really what it boils down to. And we're not really going to know why. You know, we can guess and assume that Florida thought they could just go out there and LSU would roll over and not be ready to play a game. You know, after their blowout loss versus Alabama last week, you know, LSU was making all the wrong headlines during the season off the field, you know, all week with players being unhappy, leading to some opt-outs. And we thought this team might be checked out. That was a thought out there. And, you know, Florida inexcusably looked like the team that was checked out here. So not ready to play the game. Everything that was considered nitpicking the last few games came to a head. Maybe they thought LSU was a pushover, which they should have been if Florida was ready to play. But, you know, this is an LSU team that had barely had enough players to play this game. That's the worrisome part there when you look at it. Then maybe they were looking ahead to Alabama. Either way, inexcusable performance from the top down, coaching, offense, defense, special teams. It was system-wide failure when you lose to a 24-point underdog. Given the circumstances, everything's still on the line. You can question if Florida was going to beat Alabama next week, but it doesn't excuse the performance. What we saw Saturday night, you take your chances for that game next week, but it doesn't really matter a whole lot now, just for some pride. But, you know, you give yourself a shot next week with a win versus LSU. And, guys, to me, there was just no excuse for the performance.
To me, and I wrote this was the arrogance of your head coach just trickling all the way down through your team. The ESPN crew talked about it. Dan Mullen told them on Friday in their pre-production meeting, I think if we have two losses and win the SEC, that we're going to the playoff. Like, what world are you living in? That was never the case. Clearly, he didn't really care about the LSU game. Kyle Pitts looked fine in warmups, and then all of a sudden, he's a late scratch. It looked like Florida didn't care about this game, and they were just trying to go through the motions. And I think that starts from the top. I don't understand why Dan would get that notion, why he would tell – even if he had that notion, why he would tell the TV crew the night before the game. And listen, Dan's arrogant, and it's fun when you're winning. When you're 8-1, 9-1, and he says, like, his little sly things, it's fun. And you can use it, and you retweet it, and it's cool. But it's an act that, you know, loses its cuteness when you get beat by a team. Like Dave said, that literally seemed to be self-destructing on Wednesday coming into the game. So to me, it's just it's really hard to explain how Florida came into this game, because it certainly didn't seem interested in playing LSU Saturday. And like you said, and we go back to, again, to last week, seemed like they didn't really care about playing LSU. Then all of a sudden you're down and you're trying to find the switch to be like, okay, well, where's that offense that we have? Where's those defensive stops that we need? And just couldn't turn it around.
Yeah, and, you know, Dan Mullen wants to consider himself the next Nick Saban, and he may very well become that, but when you consistently don't drop the arrogant act and don't have that accountability in post-game, pre-game media, that is going to absolutely be grating and tiring to your fan base. He's more like Mike Leach right now, who – yeah, when he's winning, that stuff's going to absolutely play well to your fan base. But when you're losing and you're coming out there still making the same excuses, refusing to own up to the mistakes, claiming you didn't see the shoe throw downfield, I mean, that's just going to lose you a lot of good favors or good standing with the fan base in a sense. And I would like to see a little more accountability, maybe not from putting the blame on the players, but we are used to seeing assistant coaches, I don't want to be say thrown to the fire, but be held accountable for the decisions that they've made. And I think that this Florida fan base is just waiting for the time when some form of accountability is said about Todd Grantham. And the fact that that has not happened yet is absolutely an understandable frustration in my mind. And a game like this justifies why people have wanted him to come out here and have that self-realization, because doing the same old is not going to work. One more thing I got to say, this is so peculiar to me, what Nick's comments were, you know, that he came out pregame and spoke about, oh, you know, we could really kind of lose this game and still have a case. That is so out of character for a head coach who won't even make his quarterback's Heisman Trophy case in the media for fear of getting into his head, throwing him off his game, affecting his preparation. And then you're going to go out there and make a team-wide comment.
Yeah, I mean, and with everything, with everything to still play for, that's my thing. And Mullet even said it after the Georgia game and the Arkansas game and such, as, hey, we got to go out there and get better. We got to go out there and get better every week. We did not see that. We did not see that whatsoever. And yeah, I mean, I got the, you know, there was the fan base thought of, oh, we're saving some stuff for Alabama and blah, blah, blah. No,
I said that too. So I gotta eat some crow for breakfast as well. I had said,
look, Nick Saban knows Dan Mullen's coffee order. He knows the notes that Dan took as an assistant GA at Notre Dame back in the late 80s. Like, Nick Saban, you're not hiding anything from Nick Saban. That's not a thing. I think that's just a thing people want to say to themselves to make them feel better about bad performances. Oh, it was vanilla this week, and we didn't really try to score points. Like, you're not hiding anything from Nick Saban. Come on, dude. That's the GOAT. You're not getting anything past him.
And even if that is the case, what have we said about the defense all year? Okay, they're not playing aggressive, and it's kind of bleeding over into their mentality. Well, if you're going to get vanilla on offense, if you're going to keep getting vanilla on defense, what do you think the mindset's going to be? What do you think that consistent mindset of being vanilla and not trying your hardest and not being aggressive, what do you think is going to happen? Well, Saturday night was what was going to happen. You couldn't flip the switch. LSU was ready to come play, hit you in the mouth, beat you in the trenches. They did it. And Florida just wasn't ready for it. So this whole lackadaisical approach or saving stuff for Alabama or trying to stay healthy and all that, it did not pay off. It did not. The long-term look for this team of whether you're saving yourself mentally or trying to save something for the opponent or trying to save yourself as far as health goes, it didn't bleed over, and it turned into a colossal failure versus LSU.
That trickles down every single week, though. I mean, you had people still at halftime making jokes, yeah, but kind of in seriousness saying, okay, Kyle Pitts is going to run out here, out of the tunnel. I mean, do you not know what unavailable means? I mean, people are expecting, as if Florida is making these, are making these mistakes on purpose, and you can lull yourself into thinking that, absolutely. But I think now the sample size is, that's not the case whatsoever. When it comes to the defense and how much leeway they're giving for their mistakes, I think most of why you see the fan base calling for some of those younger players is because we've already seen younger players have a shorter leash in a sense. Jaden Hill, Chester Kimbrough can't go out there and be 10 yards off their man and give up a 30-yard reception and still be in the game the very next play. If either one of them throws a shoe, they're getting yanked and probably yelled at like Kelvin Taylor. That's kind of in my mind why the favoritism towards upperclassmen can sometimes come back to bite you in a sense, because yeah, you're showing loyalty and that will pay off down the road, but you're rubbing your wrong players, your younger players the wrong way, who may feel like, oh, I wouldn't do that. Even if I slip up in one play, I'm not costing us like this on a moronic, you know, boneheaded move like this. That is kind of the justification. It sometimes is more than just the X's and O's of football. It's the cerebral aspect of it. And I think you kind of saw on Saturday that some of those fans were justified for their approach.
Graham, I was gonna save it for later, but that is gonna bring me to that. We've mentioned it in the play, Marco Wilson, the personal foul. Throwing the shoe, what message are you sending? as a coaching staff with that, not the play itself. You know, that's on Marco, undisciplined, all that, but inexcusable event for Marco Wilson there with the game on the line. The defense did their job. No excuse to act in such an immature manner and cost your team a chance to win the game. Did other things contribute to this loss? Absolutely. But there are degrees to this, and that incident just says so much about what happened after that. And it says so much that an undisciplined moment from a player that knows better and has struggled all season long. But after that, he should have been on the bench. There's no accountability, kind of going to Graham's point there, from Dan Mullen or Todd Grantham. For me, when Marco Wilson is still on the field after that play, what message are you sending to the team? Well, you're either telling players that they're not good enough to fill in for a player that helped cost you a game, chance to win the game, and at the same time, sending a message that it doesn't matter what you do out there on the field. There are no repercussions for your actions. You're going to stay out there no matter what happens. So I don't get that part of it. In no way, shape, or form. Look, I'm not a head coach. I never claimed to be, never said I would be. No more than Dan Mullen or anything, or Todd Grantham for that matter. But in no way, shape, or form should he have been on that field to me. And to me, it's also, you know, just sending a message throughout the program, throughout the team, that those actions are not going to be tolerated.
It was very South Florida celebration. That's the play that gets pointed to. Go back to the Texas A&M game. The play that gets pointed to is Malik Davis. Marco Wilson didn't turn the ball over three times. Marco Wilson didn't kick a field goal from the LSU 5, the LSU 13, or turn the ball over in the LSU 1. That's the moment that we look at because of the point in the game when it happened. It's inexcusable. It's a huge mistake. But that's not the only reason Florida lost the game. There's a number of reasons Florida lost the game. That's just one that gets pointed to. But I agree with you. And that comes from the top. If you're going to preach a Gator standard and you're going to preach accountability and discipline, you didn't show it in that moment. Because even though that's your senior, even though he's been a captain every game this year, you make a play like that, a brain fart, a mental lapse, whatever you want to call it, you got to go to the bench. You got to be on the sideline for at least a couple plays. That's just I didn't even think about it, Dave, until you said it. That, you know, what kind of message does that send to a Jaden Hill or you know, a Chester Kimbrough or anybody else? It's like, hey, yeah, no, we're gonna leave him in because we don't think you're ready for this moment right now.
Right. That's what it says to me. If they believed in those guys, then you pull him off the field, you put somebody else in. But yeah. I don't know what kind of message it sends. I really don't. I hope it's not too detrimental. Maybe I'm making too much of that part of it, but I think there is something to be said about it.
Well, listen, the trajectory of the season has changed. What's going to happen in 6 days is not going to be pretty. And then we're going to be covering the Outback Bowl. So don't worry about playing a good team in New Year's Six. You know, you've got some time to figure things out now.
Yeah, I don't want to say or jump the gun here and say that Dan Mullen is like Urban Meyer in a sense that he may show favoritism towards experienced playmakers, players who've already proven it, at the expense of developing his younger players. Because we have seen, and Nick, you can definitely attest to this, Marco Wilson has been, you know, let's not skew this, one of the hardest workers in the program, not only coming back from injury, but stepping on campus as a freshman, learning multiple positions, switching from inside corner. I mean, he has absolutely overcome challenges. So I do hate the narrative being, oh, this guy doesn't deserve to be on the field, because it's not that cut and dry. I do think that it does all just boil down to the accountability aspect and what we're just saying, the message it sends to the rest of your team. It's making everyone else feel like, hey, I can make a mistake, and as long as I recover, it's no big deal. And you also have to put it in context, and I say this kind of every single week, sadly, but the context for Marco Wilson is a little bit outside just that one play. This is someone who, unfairly or not, has been criticized by the fan base and former players this season for his play. Going back to the Texas A&M game, Nick, you brought up the Texas A&M game. Yeah, the Malik Davis fumble was pointed to by many, but the images still coming out of that game aren't of Malik Davis fumbling. It's of Marco's eyes closed getting mossed on the catch, not being able to make the play. You know, that's kind of really where a lot of it started this season. So it is worth, you know, putting that in context. And you haven't necessarily seen that Amari Burney or the Diabate type moment where they've come out in the media this year and said, I know that I haven't played well enough. I need to improve. I can get better. That is the accountability that players are also, players and fans are also asking for from one of your upperclassmen who just played their last home game at Florida. They're asking them to come out there and recognize their play. Instead, and not to be mean to Marco here, you often see that talking done on social media through Instagram or the clips in game where he's moving his arm. That stuff is going to rub people the wrong way if you're only propping yourself up when you do good plays, make good plays, and you don't take accountability for the bad ones. And seeing Marco Wilson throw a shoe after he had been beat several times by younger wide receivers, had been out of position multiple times, that stuff is absolutely going to be, in the context of it, absolutely more grating to people. And that's important to remember here. This isn't just a one-week shoe throw thing. This has been building, and I think the shoe throw kind of epitomized the frustrations of a lot of people.
Yeah, I agree there, Nick. It's a culmination of Marco Wilson's season and something that wasn't even a play that kind of just put the bow on it. I think you should, you know, say, and you know, a couple more games left this season. Hopefully, find something, play well there. But you go back and look at his performance versus LSU and the incident, and not so pretty there for one Marco Wilson. And look, guys, there was nothing consistent in this game. Trask was up and down. I don't care what the numbers say. It was his worst performance as a Florida quarterback, given the situation of turnovers, red zone production. Yes, Florida had over 600 yards of offense. Trask had close to 500, but situational football made those stats not really matter at all. Trask directly responsible for giving LSU 10 points with a pick six, fumbling deep in Gators territory as well, leading to an LSU field goal. 10 points right there in a game that you lost by three. Another interception happened in the red zone to take away a chance to score more points. So while the stats were gaudy at times, it didn't translate. Did not translate at all. Three red zone trips in the first half for only 3 points. The offensive line didn't help him out all that much. He was sacked four times. They tried a new rotation there that we've been kind of waiting to see, but for whatever reason, you wait to the last regular season game to try something and tinker there. There were times the wide receivers couldn't beat coverage. He had nowhere to go with the ball. You know, you can't make those matters worse by turning the ball over. Kyle Pitts didn't play. You guys brought that up. Clearly made a difference, but it shouldn't have against one of the worst defenses in the country. Come into this game, Gators team just wasn't focused. I mean, did that right there. Your Heisman candidate quarterback wasn't focused, wasn't ready to play. And to me, you know, the it started there. Yeah, you may have had the numbers, but it started at the quarterback position and the turnovers, guys.
Yeah, that was. A lot of the pressure that was getting to Trask. Those were coverage sacks and coverage pressure. I can't remember when it was, but Trayvon Grimes got some nice separation. It was an easy pitch and catch. And I thought, man, we're not early in this game. And that's the first time I've looked and been like, all right, that guy was like wide open. I mean, first off, tip of your cap to Kadarius Toney. I mean, like 224 all purpose, playing in your last game of the Swamp, 9 catches, 182 and a touchdown. Carried the ball 3 times, 56 yards. He played his tail off, and it sucks for guys like Trask, Stone, all those guys playing their last game. That's your last game in the Swamp. But I can't say anything but like other than you did it to yourself, because I don't know what somebody could tell me that was in a jersey last night that would make me believe that they were ready and interested in playing last night. And that's wild to think that that's where we are. With what was on the line and what was still left to play for when you went out on the field last night.
Yeah, and Graham, when we'll extend that conversation to get your thoughts on that part of it. As I said, it was just inconsistent. I mean, Kyle Trask, with the mistakes, he still played well enough to win the game. But you just needed those turnovers were just so detrimental, and you know, put Florida in an early hole, and yeah, just kind of couldn't really find their way out of it. As far as consistency goes, anyway.
Yeah, I'll tell you one player who was, you know, feeling it in the game. Kyrie Campbell, I don't know if you saw him, but
oh yeah,
absolutely livid at what was occurring. And not to call him out here in a sense, but I think a lot of people, you know, in a same sense, he did get more of a pass for missing those early games, especially the Texas A&M game, for not being in there. So seeing that emotion in the last game of the season, you know, absolutely has to be a little bit frustrating, because that's a guy who would have liked to be there the entire time. But, you know, going back to Trask's turnovers in the second quarter, absolutely, that those were surprising and out of character. But I really only put one on him. That the pick six was really the only one that I really thought should have been different. I mean, the fumble was just such a wacky series of plays, and you have to put obviously some blame on the offensive line for missed tackles. I mean, I thought Stuart Reese kind of had maybe his worst game as a Gator. And you actually saw those offensive line changes that a lot of people have been calling for, moving Ethan White to left guard, moving Stone Forsythe over to, you know, to right tackle, and you know, bringing in a new left tackle and Richard Garage. That's what people have been calling for a long time. And to see that happen in the second half, and that still not to result in a victory for Florida fans, it has to be extremely upsetting, because it's a failure to capitalize on aspects outside of your weakest area of football, which many people said was the offensive line.
Nick, I want to get your thoughts. I know you said you rewatched the game already. I thought live, I noticed the change right away with Garage going, or Garage to left tackle, Stone at right tackle, White at left guard. Through just watching at the stadium, I didn't notice a huge difference. Was it better? Maybe, but I didn't notice. And as I said, you know, you probably waited too late to do it. And that factors in here. But to me, it didn't make that much. It didn't make a huge difference.
No, I'm gonna say that was all me from asking Dan the question last Saturday. Even though he said no, that's our best five. I actually think he might have been telling the truth, because, like you said, when you put in and you shuffle those guys around, that was the same. I had people who I can recognize. They haven't changed their Twitter pictures all year, that have been yelling about how bad the right tackle is and how much they need to change, tweeting at me, they need to go back to the old O-line because this isn't working. I'm like, well, maybe sometimes the coach that sees it every day in practice knows what he's talking about, and that's the best five. To me, it didn't make a lick's worth of difference. I think Ethan White played really well, and maybe you try to find a way to put him in the lineup and leave him there. You got maybe – where's Josh Braun? I mean, White got in there, and I thought he played well. When you move guys over, I don't think Stone was as good at right tackle as he has been at left tackle, and people think that those positions are interchangeable, and it's literally completely different footwork and protections. And
well, not only that, he played left tackle all last season. He played left tackle 9 games this season, and now the 10th game of the season, you're going to put him over there?
Yeah, that's just, I mean, just a great coaching decision. just you know, probably another tip in the cap for Dan. Maybe he'll win Coach of the Year this year. It's just weird. I thought we've been saying this. If you're going to start making changes, start making them against Vanderbilt, against Tennessee, against Kentucky, not make the change down 7 points to an LSU team that has no business being in the ball game. You know, as a desperation. So head scratching, but it didn't work. So maybe that's why they didn't make it. You know, they knew that it wasn't going to work, and they've probably seen that. They've absolutely seen that five in those positions in practice, and they probably knew that it wasn't going to work, but you're just throwing something at the wall because, you know, your right tackle is getting abused.
Yeah, I didn't want to be the one to bring it up, but, you know, we've said it a few weeks ago that anyone who absolutely thinking that DeLance didn't give them the best chance at right tackle based on where everyone else would line up just was being a couch coach, and they weren't seeing all the different variations, all the different lines that John Hevesy in Florida was using. And like you said, we've seen some of these guys at right tackle. We've seen glimpses of what Stone Forsythe looks like outside the left tackle spot. And that is clearly his spot, best spot on the offensive line. I tried to preface it really carefully and word it carefully by saying this is the best available right tackle, not the best available offensive linemen. And I think that you saw that in this game. And that has to be part of why Florida fans are frustrated here. Because after what you saw last year, after what should have been, I know they didn't get a spring, they didn't get a traditional year of development in any regard, but you should have had those steps taken. You should have had some guy up who was able to compete for that spot. And the most frustrating aspect of what you saw on Saturday from the offensive line standpoint had to be that there's no one really competing for that right tackle spot. So what is Florida's offensive line going to look like next year? I mean, it's going to absolutely be contingent on guys getting a massive development, you know, stretch in spring, whenever that will occur in this crazy year that probably will extend to 2021. How are you going to develop that if guys already are not there right now? And now you're going to have a bunch of guys walk out the door after they graduate. So it's certainly, I think, a lot of
and in a different looking offense, and in a different looking offense that's going to be next year.
Absolutely. So. You know, you're losing your quarterback. You're losing what, four offensive linemen. This is a team that a lot of people were really high on this team because of how many players were coming back, and you assumed that they would just take the next step, and not having an offensive lineman able to take that next step when another guy isn't is absolutely a concerning aspect. And I know that John Hevesy, when it comes to criticizing assistant coaches, it seems like John Hevesy has been given a free pass this year in a sense, maybe based on the standards of what we saw last year, thinking that, oh, look at these offensive linemen. They already were kind of mediocre, let's call it that, at several aspects, especially run blocking. And then they don't get, like I said, a spring regular development period. How can we really expect them to make massive improvements? I don't know if that resulted in giving them a pass here, but it seems that after Saturday, you absolutely can start asking legitimate questions about what Florida's ceiling is at the offensive line. Because if we just saw it on Saturday, it didn't look much better or much more promising than what we've seen all season.
Yeah, so that's something I'm going to go back on the rewatch and just kind of see. I just know at first glance it wasn't any more impressive than the normal starting five. Run game, kind of extending offensive line talk a little bit. Inconsistent here outside of Malik Davis, but even there was a questionable run in him on the first drive of the game where Gators had fourth and goal at the one, failed to score. But best back of the night by far, Davis. He had a 39-yard run. Tony, 3 carries for 56 yards. Damian Pierce only averaged 3 yards a carry on 8 carries, 24 yards. Florida struggled in the red zone due to, in part, to a lack of run game. I know that was brought up last week. Did a whole hour-worth episode of the run game last week here on Gators Breakdown. I know we peppered Mullen with questions about it. And, well, I mean, if he wanted to run the ball last night, it was another inconsistent performance there, saying he could just go line up and run it if he wanted to. So, mentioned the wide receivers struggling to get open at times, but man, they also made some really good plays, tough catches all night long with tight coverage. Nick, you brought it up. Tony had his most productive night ever as a Gator, his last game in the Swamp, 9 catches, 182 yards and a touchdown. Jacob Copeland had his best game as well with a tough catch after tough catch, going 5 catches, 123 yards and a score. Javon Grimes, 4 for 98 in his last home game as well. It was hard to go out like that given the performance of those guys, because I thought for the most part, yeah, we talked about trying to, you know, beating coverage, beating some press that LSU was doing, but I thought all in all, I'm giving the wide receiver group a good bit of credit for some of the catches that they made and production that they brought to the table.
Yeah. I wrote words about it. I'm just having trouble. I don't know how you're listen, Rick's, I think will be a very good player, but to not get separation against this LSU secondary that was out, you know, three starters that, didn't have Derek Stingley Jr. And, I don't understand some of the play calling, just like trying, like going to the well with that running game. I mean, if you look at it, obviously 26 rushes to 48 pass attempts, it's not that close. But just at times, like that first drive, just turned towards the running game, when really your only effective running play was like a draw and an end around. It's not who you are. And I don't know why you forced it at times, or it's really interesting. And I think the red zone issues for me last night, that's Kyle Pitts. And that's,
yeah,
that's the difference. You know, if you look at Kyle Trask and Mac Jones stats, and specifically you get to the touchdowns, and Kyle's got way more touchdowns. And I look at it, I'm like, yeah, because look what Najee Harris does when they get down to the red zone. If Florida's down on the 3-yard line and they're trying to throw the ball, they're trying to have, you know, Trask do the little rocker step and do stuff like this. And like, that's Florida's a finesse passing team. And that's why Kyle Trask, some of his stats are better than Mac Jones, because Alabama's got a running game and they can do stuff in the end zone. And we've just gotten to the point where Florida's now, I've kind of talked about it, you know, all season. I said, well, they haven't made themselves one dimensional yet. Florida's one dimensional. Mm-hmm. And they can't run the ball. Their best running game last night was Kyle Trask running a draw, or Kyle Trask running that quarterback power. And it's going to be an issue. It hadn't been an issue, or you were good enough to maybe mask it up to this point, but it showed up last night, and you just weren't able to be physical enough when you needed to be to get six, and you settled for three a couple times.
Or outside of Trask, it's back-to-back weeks where a wide receiver has looked like made the best run play. You know, Kadarius Toney late there in the fourth quarter with that one. Mm-hmm. Jacob Copeland the week before. We saw this throughout Dan Mullen's first 2 years in Gainesville. Creativity with running the ball.
Right.
Motion in the backfield. You know, jet sweeps, reverses, just trickery. Whatever you want to call it. And now it just seems so archaic, as if you're not giving your run game a chance, or if you're committed to the formulaic approach. And that's just not what we were used to seeing out of Dan Mullen, the guy who would go for it on fourth down and trusted his wide receiver and Kadarius Toney to throw the game winning touchdown pass against his former program. I mean, you didn't see those risks. That it was a very, you know, vanilla bland offense at times this season. And I think that has absolutely rubbed people the wrong way. I also, when it comes to what you guys say about using Kyle Trask in the running game, it justifies in my mind when you're seeing people say, well, where's Emory Jones? Where's Emory Jones? We saw in the fourth quarter, it seemed like a month ago, Emory Jones have a really, really good stretch in the fourth quarter, made plays with his feet, threw some nice balls. I mean, that's a guy who you're supposed to be propping him up as the signal caller next year. This is your guy going into after the bowl game. I have not seen that in the last few weeks, and I don't know if there's something we don't know about his availability, and if that's the case, then forgive me here, but when you're seeing Kyle Trask run those draws and goal line action and taking hits like that, I can't help but cringe, because I'm one of those people right now who's saying, man, they just got to get to Atlanta, get as few injuries as possible. This game absolutely doesn't matter. As long as you can win the game, make sure you're as healthy as possible. And we've said it every single week. What's the risk-reward benefit of playing a complete game versus resting your guys against Alabama, especially when you just played seven straight weeks? And that's another thing I think we're not really assessing. It's really easy to get all your mistakes corrected when you come out of, what, a three-week layoff. A lot of us were actually surprised that Florida looked so improved after being away from the field after that Texas A&M shutdown. But that's really how things work. You have time to rest, get things worked back up, and then actually focus and attack your opponent. We were among the people out there who were concerned at Florida's health, focus level, energy level, especially in a year where conditioning and wind are not really at a premium. We were worried about that all season long, how they would fare. And it makes a little bit of sense to me that they kind of just ran out of juice, inspiration, whatever you want to say. They ran out of a lot of things yesterday in the last regular season game, and it does make a little bit of sense. But not seeing Emory Jones in there, not seeing more of those creative run plays, I don't get it. It makes me, with the people who said, oh, well, they got to be saving some of this for Alabama, because otherwise, what were you doing not calling those plays?
Yeah, that's part of my thing about being aggressive too. Well, get aggressive early so you can get those young players in the second half. If you want the young guys to get playing time, go out there and get up, you know, 30-3 like you should be, like Alabama's doing against LSU and the teams later on in the season. That's what, you know, they did. They got up big at halftime and You know, they had at least had a decision if they wanted to get some young guys in. They got some starters in at points too, but that's kind of what you expected from Florida as well. Let's move to the other side. One more thought about the defense guys here. I just don't. I mean, we've said it week in and week out. I just still don't understand how some of these issues still occur last game of the season. Inconsistent day for them as well. They gave up 30 points to a team. You know, there was the pick six there, but gave up 30 points to a team starting a freshman quarterback. Only got to him twice. Didn't force him into making any mistakes by playing soft once again. So passive once again. LSU wide receivers open all night long for chunk plays. Players not getting set, not knowing where to be, blitzing from Jacksonville, confusion. I mean, everything this defense has struggled with all season long came to a head once again against a quarterback making his first start. And Max Johnson goes 21-36, 239 yards, 3 touchdowns. Not gaudy stats, but, I mean, he did what he was supposed to do against this Florida defense. 3 touchdowns there. I mean, look, this is the second week in a row you played a freshman quarterback and you weren't able to make him throw a pick 2 weeks in a row. Against Tennessee, LSU this week. There, LSU's rushing attack wasn't great, averaging 3.6 yards on 50 carries, 179 yards total. But they did help convert third and short after third and short. LSU was 8 of 18 on third down. 5 of those were converted on the ground. The Tigers were 5 of 6 on third and short situations. That's 3rd and 1 of 4. I mean, you know, they got Florida where they wanted them, and in third and short situations where Florida's kind of been pretty good this year on defense and third and short situations didn't show up. One more thing you can kind of just point to, maybe not being focused, not being ready, not being able to be physically ready to go into trenches with LSU. Those third and short situations over and over again. So Gators were getting beat up front all night long on both sides of the ball.
Have they gotten home on a corner blitz?
I think once.
Once
I think
this season,
once, maybe.
Maybe. Just keep dialing them up, though.
And then the one they did, I mean, both of them come. Both corners, top of the screen and the bottom of the screen. And wide open. I mean, Trevez Johnson couldn't rotate fast enough. I mean, it's same mistakes over and over again.
What week are we in? Week 3, right? Week 2? It's fine. Those, you can just keep making those same mistakes. You'll get them corrected eventually.
And I know, and look, guys, I mean, it was brought up in the post game and it was asked. And look, we know by now Mullen's not going to throw anybody under the bus, but we have to ask the questions. We really have to, just to see what he's going to say. What if anything's going to happen? He has no issue chewing him out in front of national TV on the sideline, but he won't say much in front of media sessions about because he can't sit there and think that's acceptable in week 10, but maybe he does, and that's why it keeps happening.
Yeah,
He's fired one coordinator. He's been a head coach for 12 years. He's fired one coordinator, and he hired Todd Grantham after that. I don't think he'll fire Todd. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I could be wrong. I don't think he will. Sorry.
It's the same criticism I made and we all made during the Jim McElwain era. There were mistakes. There were things that needed improvement. And Jim McElwain only fired one coach. And for him, it was on the defensive side of the ball, Kurt Callahan. And the funny thing with Jim McElwain is it was his offense that needed improvement. That's the same thing for Dan Mullen. There's a chance that he loses Brian Johnson here pretty soon to a head coaching gig. You may have to replace your offensive coordinator after the season as well. If you lose your defensive coordinator and you aren't already looking right now at who's out there and you go out there, it sounds kind of funny to say right now, but you go out there and make a Bo Pelini type hire, it's going to absolutely raise, you know, that criticism in a sense, because you haven't necessarily shown that you've gone out and tackled that issue head on. And if I'm Dan Mullen, that should absolutely be my first priority throughout the week. Realize that Todd Grantham, who already has fielded NFL interest, has looked elsewhere, and he really isn't, you know, I understand that him and Dan Mullen are close, but he's not like one of those guys like Gonzalez, Brian Johnson, John Hevesy, Greg Knox, who would wash Dan's car if he really asked him to. I mean, he's a guy who, when a head coaching job opens up, that loyalty will no longer be a factor. And so if you're Dan Mullen, you have to kind of think of it the same way for yourself. You have to realize that you're going to need to find a defensive coordinator who is going to fix your problems, or you're going to start getting the heat that Todd Grantham is getting right now and that Jim McElwain got. When changes aren't made, then it absolutely falls on the head coach. And this is going to be a pivotal stretch after the SEC championship to see what Dan Mullen does. If he goes ahead and moves on past Todd Grantham, I think that'll appease a lot of the fans, but you're more likely to see a situation where he leaves for an NFL job.
Yeah, we'll see there. I know Gator fans will be looking very closely for that here. A couple social media things, guys. Thanks for sending these Twitter comments here. Let's get into a couple before we go here. Nashville Gators fan says, lack of true, consistent run game and basic discipline and fundamentals on defense finally caught up with us. You cannot win in the SEC being undisciplined. Tampa Dad says, I think a 10-game SEC schedule, lack of depth, and no defensive improvement was baffling. The part that got me was the inability to line up correctly, substitute, understand the play calls, and get into base coverages. If it is too complicated, why didn't we simplify it? Well, we've hit on that.
What issues lining up?
That was when Kyrie Campbell come off really ticked off. I mean, he come in on the third down, barely got lined up, and I think a timeout was called at that moment. And he comes off the field livid, and that makes me think it's a communication issue on the sideline, that it wasn't communicated to him that he needed to be out there the way he reacted after that. Now, I could be completely wrong, but that's what his reaction tells me. This is that, hey, I didn't even know I was supposed to be out there because of the communication issues, maybe from the staff or whatever, to send him out there. So it's just a guess on my part, but he was absolutely livid coming off the field in that third down conversion or that third down play.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, that's one of those guys that you expect that out of. We said throughout the offseason, this is an emotional leader for Florida, that defensive tackle position. We know the development is not there based on the recruiting, signing just one defensive tackle. In the first 2 years, we knew that Kyrie Campbell was a critical piece. I mean, I think that more people were probably surprised that it wasn't something that was discussed as much. When you even go back and look at Adam Shuler coming into the program, how critical that was at saving the position. The absence of Kyrie Campbell, I think many people underestimated that, not only just in the first few games, because we saw massive improvements from the defense, but from an emotional leadership, we got to get this thing together standpoint. That is a guy who is absolutely, he's not going to bite his tongue. He's going to tell you exactly how he feels, as profane and angry as it may be, because that's an emotional guy who his emotions aren't frequently going to get you in trouble, unlike some players on this defense. If anything, they're going to spark people up. And I will say this, and maybe it's in Marco Wilson's defense here, the players are a product of the coach. And when you consistently week after week see a defensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator come out and say, we don't have problems lining up, we don't have problems getting the play call in, our scheme is a 10 out of 10 difficulty, players at home don't, you know, everything, single thing that takes away from the apparent mistakes that you're seeing out there, you have to believe that that's a trickle-down effect to the players. If they see the guy making nearly $2 million not taking any accountability and not owning up to the bad plays, what incentive is there for an underpaid, in every regard, student-athlete to come out there and say, hey, you know, I messed up, or even say to the coach, pull me, I'm not playing well enough, give someone else an opportunity. When you have a defensive coordinator that kind of acts like, you know, it doesn't stink, I think that you're going to have a trickle down effect in a degree. And good thing Kyrie Campbell doesn't have that. Let me say that.
Guys, do you remember going back to that point? This Graham brought up a good point here. Before the season started, Todd Grantham called Marco Wilson the most versatile player he's ever coached. What happened?
I think I wrote that story.
Retweet. I mean,
I don't know. I have no, and obviously everyone knows my relationship with that family going back. I mean, I think I've known Marco since he was like 10 years old. I've got no explanation for the season he's had. I mean, you watched him freshman year, and he was a fan favorite as a freshman, and you're thinking the sky's the limit, and he had to come in and save the day last year.
Right, so and he played well last year.
I got no explanation. Now, listen, I think some of the stuff I'm seeing said about him is going a little too far on social media. I think we've jumped the shark a little bit, but sorry, Jim McElwain. I don't have an explanation for how he's playing, but clearly, like we said before, that's, you know, he stayed in after his unsportsmanlike conduct penalty. So that's what you've got. That's your best guy.
Yep. A few more thoughts here, kind of extending the thought maybe behind the scenes or to the staff a little bit. Aiden Murtha says, important thing for Florida and Mullen to know is we need to stay consistent throughout the season. Can't have these peaks and dips throughout the season. Elite teams keep the intensity throughout every game, and that's what we need to work on in order to be contenders. The word elite was brought up there, and I think we can safely say now that this Florida team, not elite there. Morgan Wrighton says, I know coaching has been blamed all year, but this was probably the most glaring example that this is not a well-coached team, especially not on defense. LSU barely fielded a team led by a freshman quarterback and outplayed us. Matt Smith, the reason the Gators are so undisciplined and out of position is it just the players? The coaching staff needs to look in the mirror, start reevaluating themselves and their actions. You lost to a team that had more heart and pride. Selfish and undisciplined gets a team nowhere. And last couple here, Jonathan Kaplan says, the sad part is I'm not even that frustrated. Anyone can see that this defense was not going to be able to win a national championship, and we are still playing for the SEC championship. I just wish Dan would hold more people accountable, players and coaches. And last one here at 1117, Supreme Griff says, this team lacked leadership and heart. I don't even think we have a captain on defense. Ain't no way we're still looking lost on defense with Grantham putting the same trash people out there. Marco picked on all year. He kept them out there, shaking my head. So a lot of kind of guys, what we brought up, but you can tell the fan base a little frustrated just by a inexcusable loss to LSU here. And, mainly just because of the accountability and just not showing up ready to play.
And, you know, we talk so often, let me just say this real quick here, and I'll be real quick on this. You know, we talk so often about things that are lost. Preseason development, everything else, conditioning. That's not all that the Florida program does. Everything they do in the offseason, don't drop the rope, stadiums, workouts, position group battles, off the field, social activities. That stuff also goes a long way towards building accountability. When you're hanging out with your teammates after practice and it's a less serious environment, you often can say, hey, we got to get this right. We got to get this right. And those moments are lacking absolutely right now. The 4 a.m. runs, the conditioning that brings teams closer together, builds that accountability. That is absolutely something that in my mind is missing this season as well. And we don't talk about it as much as we talk about the lack of wind and conditioning.
And at some point, if your position coaches aren't holding their position groups accountable, it's the buck stops at your desk, head coach. You got to make decisions and hold people accountable before you're the one being held accountable, because it's all happening on your watch.
Yeah, that's the bad thing. It just kind of came to a head. You know, everything that we saw as issues came to a head, and especially against a 24-point underdog. And that's what it takes for a 24-point underdog to win. Is everything that like that coming to a head and happening all at one time. And that's, you get the performance that you got from Florida on Saturday night versus LSU. So guys, man, thank you so much. We recorded a little bit early today. Thank you for adjusting schedules and all that stuff to help out here. We'll see next week what we can do for an episode, and maybe funeral music in the background the whole time or something. I don't know. We'll maybe come up with something there, but man, this was supposed to be a fun week and a fun trip to Atlanta. We can still make it fun, but the football aspect of it was supposed to be a little more fun that I don't think it's going to be there now.
Ooh, the boogeyman's coming. Don't look under the bed. I do not have high hopes for Saturday.
No.
No.
No, not at all. You know, I had said this a couple weeks ago. Nick Saban just beat his biggest rival in his loft. I mean, he may not even need to show up at the game, and they beat Florida. And we were making the point that he knows everything that Dan Mullen wants to do. Well, he's got assistants who can go out there and have them not miss a beat. And I think that we've said all season long, Florida is not in the same boat whatsoever. So
maybe Alabama gets COVID this week and they can't play the game.
I'm more concerned possibly with, you know, I don't know. You just played a team that barely had enough scholarship players to make the trip to Gainesville, and you had to go all out against them. I mean, if I'm Florida, I'm worried about the same lack of enthusiasm and energy level that LSU's been experiencing. And I don't want to make parallels to what FSU went through a few years ago, but you had a head coach who was kind of checked out, looking elsewhere, and that's Florida fans' biggest fears, that Dan Mullen is looking at the NFL, and that's why all the problems aren't getting corrected right now, because they're not going to be his problems in 2021. You can look up to the school out west and look at the blueprint for how that can go if you don't handle that while the coach is still in the building. And it absolutely gives credence to when I hear people say, you got to make a move right now, because you may not get a chance to make that move.
Yeah, the window of opportunity is there. It's limited sometimes, and you know Florida had that window right now, and goes out the window right now. The performance there. So now going to Atlanta with basically playing for pride. At this point, you're playing for pride, and we'll see how far that takes Florida, because there wasn't a lot of pride shown in the field on senior night, last game of 2020 season versus LSU. So. We'll see.
I got to tell a quick story. This is how I think it's going to go on Saturday. Last time Florida was in the SEC championship, beforehand, you had Florida media people coming down in the tunnel to us and saying, hey, here's how many starters we've averaged missing all year long. If you could go ahead and just put this out here before the game. Yeah, they knew how that was going to go. I wonder if we're going to get something like that on Saturday.
Yeah, pride ain't covering Devonta.
No, it's not. It is not.
Pride ain't tackling Najee. Good luck, buddy.
Yeah. All right, Graham Hall. From Gainesville Sun, Nick De La Torre from Gator Territory, joining us right here on Gators Breakdown. Guys, thank you so much. And everybody out there, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown. I'm your host, David Waters. You can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And we'll see you again next week.